Psalm 17, 1 to 7 and 15. Hear a just cause, O Lord. Attend to my cry. Give ear to my prayer from lips free of deceit. From you let my vindication come. Let your eyes see the right. If you try my heart, if you visit me by night, if you test me, you will find no wickedness in me. My mouth does not transgress. As for what others do by the word of your lips, I have avoided the ways of the violent. My steps have held fast to your paths. My feet have not slipped. I call upon you, for you will answer me, O God. Incline your ear to me, hear my words. Wondrously show your steadfast love of Savior of those who seek refuge from their adversaries at your right hand. As for me, I shall behold your face in righteousness. When I awake, I shall be satisfied, holding your likeness. Second reading is the Hebrew Scriptures, Genesis 37, 1 to 4, 12 to 28. Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. He was a helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other children, because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now the brothers went out to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock of Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." He answered, "Here I am." So he said to them, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him from the valley to Hebron. He came to Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields. The man asked him, "What are you seeking?" "I am seeking my brothers," he said. "Please tell me where they are pasturing the flock." The man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from a distance, and before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he delivered him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life," Reuben said to them. "Shed no blood, throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but lay no hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand and restore him to his father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the long robe with the sleeves that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, where their camels were carrying gum, balm, and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Herein is wisdom. Okay, Matthew 40.
The gospel reading for today is Matthew 14, 22 to 33. Jesus walks on water. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for wind was against them. And early in the morning he came walking towards them on a lake. But when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and started walking on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat and the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Herein is wisdom. How do you tie up five scripture readings into one story? Well, there's a lot of great resources out there to help us when we get up here to do these messages. So, you of little faith. This important statement was made by Jesus to Peter. I suggest it was a lesson to Peter to always have faith, something that in modern times I believe all of us struggle with, especially when we don't understand things and don't have enough or perhaps too much information, data, to fully process the situation. When we have tragedy or illness, we lose hope. Peter lost faith due to being distracted by the storm in the water and taking his focus from Jesus to the storm. When we're faced with storms of life and have disappointment, grief, agony, or fear, we seem to put our faith on hold. There's a lot of modern day examples of folks who had great dreams and ideas and kind of lost faith in them. Some of them were pretty interesting and a little funny and in the sense of some things that we've heard. In 1962, a recording company executive heard about a new band coming on the British scene. He had serious doubts about the possibility of their success and said, "We don't think the Beatles will do anything in their market. Guitar groups are on their way out." Thomas G. Watson was the chairman of the board of IBM in 1943. With all the confidence in the world, he once said, "I think there is a world market for about five computers." How many of you in the room have a computer? And a man named Lee DeForest invented the cathode ray tube in 1926. When he was asked about the possibilities for that invention, he remarked, "Theoretically, a television may be feasible, but I consider it an impossibility, a development which we should waste little time wasting dreaming about." Each one of these men looked at their current situation and assumed it was pretty much the end of the story. And we can't blame them. They read their data, they read their situation, they simply didn't seem that there was any other possibilities. They lost faith in the accomplishments they had made. World history is full of dreamers and those who might scoff at them. There are stories of many optimists who dream about an unknown future and see possibility when a situation seems to call for disbelief. And we know pessimists who feel that we shouldn't waste our time with dreams, visions, or thoughts about the future. To make matters even more complicated, most of us are not fully one way or the other. Many of us have no difficulty from moving from one extreme to the other. Today, modern technology helps businesses gain data that identifies trends that help businesses make decisions. I did this in my career. However, much of the data I gained was more through word of mouth by talking with people. Forecasts from last year, last month, are a little like trying to forecast the weather. Is it going to rain today? Modern grocery or department stores track our purchases to ensure that they have the most popular items when we come to shop. Yet this week, I couldn't find an item I was looking for in the co-op store. Today, they even use data to send us messages, coupons, like Groupon, for products that the data engine suggests we should be interested in, even though, and it's very often, I don't want or need their suggested product offerings. Messages for products the data engine suggests we should be interested in, even though, and often, I don't want sugary treats. I don't need baby diapers, at least not yet. And their suggested product offerings are not for me. Maybe we have information overkill with all our modern technology, computer, tablets, smartphones, and it skews our ability to process information that takes away from our faith. Found. There's an interesting chart on display in the British Museum in London. It's an old mariner's chart drawn in 1525 outlining the coastline of North America and the adjacent waters. The map maker made some interesting notations on this map that represented regions not yet explored. He wrote, "Here be giants, here be fiery scorpions, and here be dragons." Eventually, the map came into the possession of Sir John Franklin, a British Arctic explorer from one of Canada's recently solved greatest mysteries. Scratching out the fearful inscriptions, Franklin wrote these words across the map, "Here is God." In Genesis 37, a very important part of the story of Joseph is said to be, who is said to be the greatest dreamer of all time. Joseph's story is enough to make a TV serial and has been depicted many times on stage, Joseph in a Technicolor Dreamcoat. His father, Jacob, worked for his future father-in-law for 7 years to win the hand of Rachel in marriage. He was fooled into marrying her older sister, Leah. And even though he ended up married to both Leah and Rachel, Leah was the wife who gave birth to 6 sons before Rachel became pregnant. Joseph was the firstborn of Jacob's beloved Rachel. Eventually, Jacob fathered 12 sons in all, and you can imagine how much sibling rivalry there was between Joseph and his brothers. Jacob doted on Joseph by giving him the coat of many colors, which is figuratively a mark of favoritism that generated all kinds of jealousy. It didn't help that Joseph was a dreamer who couldn't help sharing his dreams. In between verses, we've heard Joseph tells of a dream he has in which the family are out in the wheat fields. The wheat sheaths stand up and all the others around gather and bow down to it. Of course, the brothers are outraged. "Do you mean to tell us that we're all going to end up bowing down to you?" Without understanding diplomacy or tact, Joseph goes on, "Well, I had another dream too, and that one, the sun, moon, and 11 stars are all bowing down to me." The brothers had enough of this superior talk and went off into the sheep pasture, probably to get away from Joseph and his infuriating dream stories. Jacob, who may not have been the smartest father, may have been unaware of his other son's jealousy of Joseph and sending him out to check upon the 11 brothers wearing his fancy, "I'm important, cool, and even blessed" coat. When they see him off in the distance, the brothers are very unhappy. You can just about imagine the brothers boiling over with jealousy and disgust as they see him coming. They plot to kill him, and through God's grace, a more reasonable mind prevailed, and Reuben, the oldest brother, says, "Maybe we shouldn't kill him outright. Let's just throw him into this pit here," thinking he might rescue him later. They take off his coat to trick his father and throw him into the pit. But like with any angry crowd, things spiraled out of control, and they came up with a change in plan. They ended up selling Joseph to a foreign caravan of traders and camels heading on to Egypt. The last thing we see in this passage of Joseph heading off to Egypt. Okay, so that's an interesting story about a knowing little brother, but it's not really an inspiring story. The story doesn't stop there, but it shows us something more deeply philosophical. Even the most optimistic, hope-filled, forward-thinking dreamers sometimes end up in a pit at the bottom. It doesn't matter who you are or how bright and cheery you are, there are simply times in your life when everything seems to crash in around you. It happens to you because it's happened to me. You lose loved ones, things get complicated in your family or relationships in life. Things change at work or church, financial problems develop, you deal with unexpected losses or change, or someone swerves into the parking space in front of you, which maybe is not so bad, but there are many things in life that can begin to test even the most optimistic person. These things happen to pessimists too. The difference between an optimist and a pessimist is the pessimist assumes the worst before the fact and doesn't have to face risking disappointment. I know a lot of pessimists, and their motto is plan for the worst, hope for the best, and whatever is positive is manna from heaven. No matter if you're an optimist or a pessimist, there are simply times when you think the pit, the struggle, and the bad news is the end of the story. And Joseph could have felt that way as he was tied to the back of a camel being led into Egypt. He may have even thought about his ripped up coat, which was going to be used to tell his father that he was killed. He was a dreamer, but he felt by God's grace that this was just the next step in his story, and he could live out his dreams. Even though things got worse in Egypt, he eventually became the lead hand of the Pharaoh in Egypt, overseeing all the grain production in the entire land. Using his gifts for dreaming and vision, he stored up the grain for a long famine and ended up saving his own brothers and family, just like in his dream. By the grace of God, Joseph's story was transformed from despair to victory. Like Joseph in the pit, we don't know what future holds, but like Joseph, we do know the one who holds the future. We know the giver of all good dreams, and we know the one who provides our vision, and we know that when whatever future we move into, God is already there. A Holocaust heroine who saved many lives for Jewish folks and those mentally ill, Corrie Ten Boom, said, "God does not have problems, only plans." And she also said, "There is no pit so deep that God is not deeper still." And finally, never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. No matter where you are or what you're facing, you're just an unfinished story. You may consider the unknown future and say, "There's giants there, or dragons, or pits." But by trusting the one who holds that future, you can consider the unknown and say, "There is God." Matthew 14:22-33, Jesus walks on the water. After a tough day, and having learned about the murder of John the Baptist from Peter, and then also feeding 5,000 with 12 baskets of food that Jesus eventually returned to his disciples, he sent them to their boat to go on ahead of him to the other side where he would preach the next day. He dismissed the crowd, and after he dismissed them, he went up on the mountainside by himself to pray and to meditate. Later that night, when he was alone, and the boat was already a long way from land, it was being buffeted by waves because a storm wind was blowing against it. Just before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake, and when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. "Wouldn't you be fearful if you saw a ghost coming to you if you were on a boat in the water?" And Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then Peter says, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you." "Come," he said. Peter got out of the boat and walked in the water and came towards Jesus. When he saw the wind, he took his eyes away from Jesus and became afraid, and he started to sink and cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Disciples lost faith, and Jesus brought them back to the reality of faithfulness in his actions. There's many stories in the Bible in the Old Testament of God asking leaders, prophets, kings, Moses, Jacob, Joseph, Job, Ezekiel, and David to take their faith to a higher level for a better life of God's love and compassion. Psalms and poems and songs give praise to God for many blessings given to the chosen one. In the New Testament, Jesus tells stories using Old Testament stories and parables to make faith stronger for the disciples to carry on his ministry. As I said earlier, when we are faced with the storms of life and have disappointment, grief, agony, or fear, we often forget our faith. I've had feelings of this kind in my experience over the last few years, having had a stroke, the loss of my mother-in-law, and also retiring on June 1st. All three situations I had experienced that strengthened my faith. Waking on the operating table after my surgery and seeing my angels, family members, sitting around me and saying, "You'll be okay." Beautiful remembrances of Mom at celebrations of life here and in Manitoba, and having time to do some of the things I love to do in my recent days of retirement, singing and playing music at our oldest son's wedding, planning our future with Marlene, and taking afternoon naps. My faith is getting stronger. I can't walk on water yet, but I imagine sometime soon, if I can look in the eyes of Jesus, I should be able to. That's the end of my talk for today. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you to tell the story. The next is the item, hymn, Voices United 675, "Will Your Anchor Hold?" Thanks, Dan.